Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Leaders Speak, focusing on the intersection of healthcare and health research. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. From research into healthcare quality and effectiveness to responding to emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases, the U.S. federal government invests billions in healthcare and health-related research. Today, we will speak to two national leaders in this area who are finding new avenues for translating research into practice and, most of all, working to save lives. What is healthcare quality? How do you ensure patient safety? And how do we combat emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases? Today, our guests, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and Dr. Carolyn Clancy, Director of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, offer their extended reflections on such questions. First up is our conversation with Dr. Carolyn Clancy. Healthcare remains one of the most pressing issues facing us today. Our system faces challenges in quality, safety, access, and cost. Dr. Clancy leads an agency that funds research exploring such issues.
So the mission of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, or ARC, as we call it, is to improve the quality, safety, efficiency, and effectiveness of healthcare for all Americans. Ultimately, our goal is to improve the quality and safety of healthcare so that every American can know, no matter where they get healthcare, that it will be predictably high quality and safe. They won't have to worry about everything that's going wrong. Now, we achieved this goal by supporting research and working very closely with those who provide care, clinicians of all disciplines, with patients, with policymakers, so that they can use this information to improve the delivery of healthcare itself. Ultimately, disseminating the findings from our research, we hope, helps support a nation of healthier, more productive individuals, and frankly, a much greater return on the substantial investment that we make in healthcare today. Now, ARC is about 20 years old. It was first authorized in 1989, so this will be an anniversary for us this year, although it's been too busy to actually think about celebrations. How we help HHS is to achieve its strategic goals to improve safety, quality, affordability, and accessibility of healthcare, and so forth. And we work very closely with a number of other components of the department. We now fund work in almost all 50 states. There might be one or two we've missed, but that's a relatively new development in the past 5 years or so. Our budget is $372 million for this fiscal year. That does not include additional resources that were allocated to the agency through the Recovery Act. We have about 300 people who work at ARC, and about 80% of our budget is invested in grants and contracts focused on improving healthcare, many to academic institutions, but not exclusively. We've also partnered with community health centers, with hospitals, and so forth.
Dr. Clancy's main role is that of a maestro. She is there to ensure that all parts of ARC work together efficiently and effectively, with a clear focus on the mission she outlined and the portfolio she manages.
So my responsibility is to make sure that all of the parts of ARC work together to make a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. I'm totally privileged to work with a team that is completely fantastic. A big part of my day-to-day work is actually communicating what it is that we're trying to do. How do you connect the dots between the research that we're supporting, which can be pretty technical at times, to the health care that you're going to get or that you're worried about on behalf of a family member or someone you care about? And that part is a great deal of fun, and I think it keeps us all grounded, and it gives me a chance, as well as many of my colleagues, to hear Americans' concerns about what's going on with their health care. So we have, as most government organizations do, an org chart, which displays the anatomy of the organization. We've got 5 research centers and 3 offices that make everything work. But we really organize our work around portfolios. That's really the physiology or how we do our work. So the portfolios are effectiveness and comparative effectiveness. Another portfolio is patient safety and quality. A third is health IT, and our role there is evaluating selected applications of health IT for their impact on safety and quality. A fourth is improving value in healthcare. A fifth is prevention and care management. How do we prevent disease? How do we optimally manage chronic illnesses? And then the sixth is something called innovations, because we understand that just as innovations are important in developing new products, the notion and concept of innovation is also critical to improving healthcare delivery.
Managing such an expansive mission and portfolio presents its challenges. Dr. Clancy outlines for us the top challenges facing her and her agency.
Well, one challenge is, which I think is generic to all large organizations, possibly even small organizations, is communication. On one level, we, of course, have email and many different routes of communication. On another level, our business is information. So sorting through all that and trying to make sense of it and assuring that we're all on the same page, not just at 5,000 feet above the ground, but literally in our day-to-day work, I would say is a big challenge. It's fun, and it's fun to work through it with people who are not only really smart, but actually very passionate about what they do and about making a difference in healthcare. Another challenge that I think all of us share these days is just 24/7. How do you manage to fit it all in a particular day? And to some extent, interestingly, I think advances in information and communications technology have both made this easier and harder at the same time, because you're always reachable. A third challenge, frankly, is personal balance for me, because I love the work that we do and I love the people I work with. So trying to turn it off on occasion to do other things is sometimes challenging.
Challenges in healthcare abound. As a country, the U.S. spends more on healthcare than any other nation. Yet numerous studies have found that there is no real relationship between spending and the quality of care. Dr. Clancy, director of ARC, defines quality in healthcare and elaborates on its basic dimensions.
The right care for the right patient at the right time, every time. And the every time really refers to your confidence in knowing that if you went to practice A as opposed to practice B, or if you live in one state or region versus another, that you'd be getting the same care that's consistent with the best that we know in science as it applies to you as a unique individual. In general, we think about healthcare quality as having three components. Structure are literally the structures, the hospitals, the professionals who provide care, and so forth. And historically, we have put a great deal of emphasis on that. We want to know that hospitals have all the right facilities and equipment, that they can sterilize things and so forth, that the professionals who are on staff have had good training and can do a good job and have the kind of training that we would expect in this country. Unfortunately, what we've learned over the past 20 years is that structure doesn't always predict accurately what happens to people, that is to say, the process, what kind of care they get, or the outcomes or end results. So process of care is literally what kinds of treatments you're given, what kinds of tests are ordered to make a diagnosis, and so forth. Do you get a mammogram, for example, if you're a woman in the right age range, looking for a way to detect possible breast cancer early? If you are unfortunate enough to have a heart attack, do you get timely treatment and so forth? That's all about the process, what's going on. And what all of us care about is the end result. Am I better off as a result of all this health care? That can get a little bit tricky to measure because there's many things that affect end results. For example, people who are wealthier tend to do better than poor people. We know that people who are well-educated tend to do better than people who are not so well-educated. But overall, what we want to make sure is that what we do for patients matches their needs and preferences and actually helps them to get on with their lives and not worry so much about what's going on in healthcare.
And yet, according to the Centers for Disease Control, nearly 2 million patients suffer from healthcare-associated infections in U.S. hospitals each year, resulting in 99,000 deaths annually. Here's Dr. Clancy on ARC's prevention efforts to reduce healthcare-associated infections.
So this is a growing problem, and it's one that people understand very, very easily. You know, what's wrong with this picture? My family member went into the hospital with one problem, and they came out with a second problem, a very serious infection. We've seen famous people and not so famous people at all suffering serious consequences because of these infections, which are largely avoidable. There are many causes of the infections, but one of the areas that I'm very proud of has to do with some work we supported a few years ago in the state of Michigan. So we supported a team from Hopkins to do something that was ultimately called the Keystone Project. What they were focusing on was reducing serious bloodstream infections. Now, these can be deadly, make no mistake about it. And these infections can be caused by IV lines that are put in centrally. Some relatively straightforward steps can actually reduce the infection rate dramatically. What they did was to test their strategy at Hopkins. They came to ARC for a grant, although most of the project was funded by Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Michigan. We were supporting the specific evaluation and so forth. And what they did was to come up with a fairly simple strategy. It sounds simple, but it's deceptively simple, a checklist for what all members of the healthcare team needed to do. They had leadership at every hospital in Michigan. Now, we're talking from the major academic medical centers right down to very tiny hospitals, but they had them engaged at all of these hospitals, and they made data collection very easy. That was done through the Michigan Hospital Association, and the teams got quarterly feedback. So shared commitment, engagement of leadership, relatively straightforward data collection, and quarterly feedback so that people could see the connection between their daily work and what was happening with the infection rates. And the results were profound and dramatic. In some cases, many of these hospitals have not had one of these infections for many months. So right now, starting about 6 months ago, we are working with the American Hospital Association's Health Research Education Trust, their research arm, to partner with 10 states to do what happened in Michigan all over again. And we got additional funding in this year's budget to expand to an additional 20 states. We think that we can make a big dent in this problem, if not wipe it out entirely over the next couple of years. It is probably the single largest example of success at improving quality and safety, and one that's been done to scale. So I think there's a lot of very important lessons to be learned from that.
Here's Dr. Clancy talking about fostering a culture of infection safety and the role the United States Preventative Services Task Force plays.
I think one of the challenges in terms of establishing a culture is that all of the nation's hospitals and other facilities have incredibly well-trained professionals working there, but they're not always working on exactly to the same music, if you will. Nursing is doing what they know well, doctors are doing what they know, and at the end of the day, what we know is that high-quality, safe care is a team sport. That's much easier to say than to make it happen, but creating the spirit of a team so that we're all on the same page or checklist, in the case of the Keystone Project, is incredibly important. I think it's also very important that ultimately we figure out in a scalable way how to make data collection to let us know how we're doing really easy with pretty timely feedback. I think this quarterly feedback that the Keystone Project had is going to be very, very important. So as we anticipate reforming the healthcare system, a lot of emphasis on improving healthcare delivery, I think this same issue of making data collection as easy as possible, and health IT should be helping with that, and feeding the information back so that everyone, from the person who transports patients up to the highest trained physician to the CEO, understands how all these dots connect. Almost 30 years ago, something fairly dramatic happened in the practice of clinical medicine. Up until that point, when patients came in to see a doctor, the very common question that both patients and doctors had, although they didn't always speak to each other about it directly, was, what tests should I have or what tests should I order? What happened starting in the late 70s up in Canada and then ultimately here was to shift the focus from what tests should I order to what diseases or conditions can we detect early, where we know there's an effective treatment, and that we know where that early detection will make a difference. And the Preventive Services Task Force was born. It was actually initially sponsored by the department, the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health. It moved to ARC about 15 years ago. So this is an independent group of nationally renowned researchers and scientists, and their focus is on making evidence-based recommendations about preventive care. Now, they take their job incredibly seriously. We support their work, but we don't have to agree with them. They are an independent team. That task force relies on the support that ARC provides to give them the best science. We support this through systematic reviews of the literature and so forth. And they go through a very deliberative process to make recommendations that are graded on the strength of the evidence. So A is the gold star rating. The evidence is outstanding. Absolutely, this should be done. B is the evidence isn't quite as good as A, but it's still impressive. C is sort of neutral. D means the service may actually cause harm. And the I rating means there's insufficient evidence to say for or against doing this. All of these recommendations are framed in the context of good clinical judgment because there's no substitute for that. We do sometimes have challenges explaining the I rating. Insufficient evidence that something is effective is not the same thing as saying that it's ineffective. And, you know, people are extremely excited about prevention. So sometimes when a service that they think just has to be important and good to do, it gets an I rating from the task force, they're a little bit disappointed. But we think, and the task force thinks, it's incredibly important to stick to the science and not to go beyond the science. So if the science stops, they will say we don't have enough evidence. Sometimes that actually prompts our colleagues at NIH to support research that will help us develop better evidence. That's happening right now, for example, at the National Institute on Drug Abuse, because the task force gave an I rating to screening people for evidence of substance abuse. So that's very exciting when it happens. We also make the findings available to clinicians. There's a terrific application that you can download from our website or just use it online, the Electronic Prevention Service Selector. The reason for this is the prevention recommendations tend to be framed in terms of age, gender, some family history characteristics, and so forth. So it's a little bit hard to do in two dimensions. But this immediately gives you the recommendation. And it's framed the way doctors want the information. We talk to lots and lots of physicians. They want the bottom line first, but they also want to know that they can get to the underlying evidence. So that's exactly how this application works.
What is comparative effectiveness research? We will continue our conversation with Dr. Carolyn Clancy, Director of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, when we return to this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on healthcare and health research.